Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to the not the morning sports briefing. Where am I at? Hello, welcome to the Super Rugby Aotearoa and Super Rugby AU finals review show here on New Zealand Sports Radio. Hi, I will be your host, Paul, and we'll be going through the Crusaders versus the Chiefs in the Super Rugby Aotearoa final, and also the Reds versus the Brumbies in the Super Rugby AU final. And as I say we, that's because it's not just myself, but I'm joined by Stephen Harris as well. How are you doing, sir?
Very good. Thank you, Paul. Good to be back on the show. Looking forward to it. It should be fun.
So, look, it was a long old day yesterday because I had to meet at the club at 10:30 in the morning before we got on our got in the minivan and drove up from Waihee to Whangarei. Whangarei, the right place? No.
Whangamata.
Whangamata, thank you. To play Mercury Bay. So a 3.5 hour round trip or 4 hour round trip there for the driving to go and play one game up against Mercury Bay and to catch some club rugby before I came back and watched the Super Rugby stuff. What was your day like yesterday before the Super Rugby, before the finals? Yeah.
A very similar day, but a pre Mother's Day visit yesterday morning, because this morning was also a busy day as well, and then off to club rugby at Waitemata Park, where I checked out the Waitemata versus Ponsonby Goodyear Auckland club rugby game, and tight contest, probably not a lot to write home about, but very very willing, and a bit of motion involved. Also I should say, just look out for some of our videos that we've posted. Catch up with one of our great All Blacks, Sibiron Williams, and definitely a tough time for the Ponsonby Club this week with the passing of Sibiron Williams' brother, Seth Williams. So our thoughts from NZ Sport Radio to not just the family, but also everybody involved in and around the Ponsonby Rugby Football Club.
Absolutely, and do go and check out those videos that Stephen did from Waitemata versus Ponsonby, or Ponies as they're known in Auckland, and also the videos that I put up from from Mercury Bay versus Waihee as well. So, because New Zealand Sports Radio Facebook page is your home for club rugby, folks, so head over to that and do join us on Tuesday evening for the Driving Mall show, when we will spend the second half of the show going over the club results. And action from around the club rugby scene. But tonight, it's all about Super Rugby. It's not about club rugby. We kicked off on Friday evening games at all this week. Jeez, I'm all over the shop, folks. With the Crusaders versus the Chiefs. Look, this looked initially like it was... at the end of the day, folks, in both these games, the home team has earned that right by being the best team during the regular season. So it's always going to be an upset if one of the away teams manages to tip over the home side, isn't it, Stephen?
Yeah, very much so, Paul. Listen, it was great to see a genuine contest, but you just felt that, and we'll get to it shortly. When you play these sides at home, you've got to take your opportunities and put the pressure back on them.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's not what happened early on with the for the Chiefs. The Crusaders got their opportunities early on, and they scored through Sefu Reese. I mean, DMAC did knock over a three, but then also we saw the role that Lester Fainuku was going to be asked to play in this game, which was getting over that game line and giving the Crusaders front football, which led them to a grubber and a try. And suddenly, after only 15 minutes, it was 12-3. I think a few of us worried that it wasn't going to be a contest of a game, and that we're going to see the Crusaders pull away and win this one comfortably. But look, there's a good reason why the Chiefs went on a 5-game winning streak, I think it was, in mid-season. It's because, yeah, you can't count them out. They do keep themselves in games. They are a dogged side, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of heart. And, boy, they showed it because, you know, a lot of sides at 12-3 down may have just folded or may have just lost a bit of composure in and around scoreboard pressure. Listen, they were creating things, Paul. But just, oh, how can I say it? Just really not totally getting in behind the Crusaders, without creating the opportunities needed to put a try on the board.
Yeah, I think we saw it with how the Chiefs got that first try. Was they ended up having to use a bit of a trick play with 12 men in the lineout, and with DMAC as the only back out of the lineout. Well, obviously as well as I think it was Triple T at that point. I think Brad Webber was off for HIA, but he did come back. With Triple T and DMAC, the only two players not either throwing in or actually in the lineout itself, yeah, the 12-man lineout, the maul didn't go over. And as Arthur pointed out during our review show, if you've got 12 men in a maul, if you get it structured right, you shouldn't be stoppable. Clearly, things weren't quite clicking for the Chiefs.
Yeah, it was actually quite a smart manoeuvre because it was just enough to compress the Crusaders' backs that were still defending in the back line. But boy, at the end of the day, it took probably one of the offloads of the season, if not the offload of the season by Ryan Nankerville. I kind of looked back at that, and he really had no right to get that offload away. He had at least two or three tacklers on him, but just was able to still free the arms, and you know that pass could have been thrown anywhere, and it just happened to be right in the hands of Damien McKenzie. And when they scored there, I thought, "Ooh, here we go, game on."
Yep, and suddenly at 12-10, and then with the Chiefs having lots and lots of pressure. I mean, look, they had the lion's share of the possession. The Chiefs, they had parity in pretty much in the possession territory, but they really went for a period then of the next sort of 10 or 15 minutes or so where they had control. They had line-out mauls that got stopped. They lost a couple of line-outs, and they just couldn't take advantage. They couldn't get themselves closer than that 2 points. And then as we see, back-to-back penalties marched the Crusaders down the pitch, and over goes 3 points. And I think it's a sign of respect here that the Crusaders knew they were going to have to take all the opportunities, and they were taking their threes. They weren't going for the corner, were they?
Oh, very much so, Paul. And, you know, there was a crucial drop kick somewhere in those threes. That just showed you that the respect that the Crusaders had for the Chiefs, that we thought, well, okay, we're going to, you know, this is not a round-robin game where we kick to the corner and go for a seven, but we actually take anything that's on offer, and that's exactly what they did.
Yep. We then had a bit of a silly captain's referral by the Crusaders. And I think we're starting to see, whilst at the beginning of this, captains were only going for surefire things, now they're pretty much having long shots. And you've got to wonder, is it really good for the game? We're slowing down. We're taking breaks out of the game. And maybe we just need to, they need to get back to doing only certainties rather than these speculative things. But you do, I mean, the commentators are right, though, saying, hey, you know what? They might as well have a stab at it because, hey, they might get lucky. That's not really how I want the captain to feel to be used, though, do we, Stephen?
Yeah, no, we don't want to see it by that. Listen, I've seen a couple of games where the official or the referees had a bit of a running commentary with the TMO while the players continue and said, hey, can you run that previous ruck? Can you have a quick look at that? If there was some foul play there. And, I think that's one way to at least keep the game moving where your stock, it gets to the next breakdown, and then the TMO can come back and say, hey, listen, I've reviewed it, had a quick look at it, nothing there, play on.
Yep. Yeah, that's why I prefer the TMO to be used rather than captain's referral, personally.
Yeah.
DMAC then showed us that perhaps the pressure was getting to him or he lost his kicking boots as he missed the opportunity to close things up at halftime, and the Crusaders went in with a 5-point lead. With DMAC missing a penalty straight after halftime as well, and you're like, okay, two opportunities there, either side of halftime, could have been a 1-point lead or could at least have closed things up. And then, so to me, yeah, look, that was probably where you thought, ooh, this is going the wrong way at that point. That just couldn't quite get there.
You know, Paul, I was about to say, that's 9 points, which would have taken it out to 19-15, and it would have, not that I'm saying it would have been enough to have won the game, but boy, the dynamics of the game actually changes a wee bit. A little bit nervousness for the home side. And that all happened in the space within 14 minutes as well, those three missed kicks.
Yeah, and that's especially the last one when he's just had been taken out in the air by Cody Taylor, who went off for a yellow card. Could have been a red, but they decided he landed safely. You think, well, actually, you've just missed two. You've just been taken out in the air. Perhaps that was a good time to give Gatland a shot. A goal when you've just been spun around midair. So, but he didn't. The Crusaders managed to double down on that then with Severin Reece with a high tackle to the head. Again, yellow carded, and we disagreed last night on the reaction show as to the severity of that one. You agreed with the yellow. I thought it should be red. But either way, the Crusaders were down to 13.
Paul, I was about to say, I spoke to a former All Black halfback today, and he thought it should have been a red card. So there you go. Just shows you how contentious this is sometimes. So when we start treading that path, we got an issue.
So either way, look, the way the red card is nowadays, it's only 20 minutes. It's not the full. It's not the rest of the game anyway. So in some ways, look, if you can't take advantage of 13 men. During that, what would have been, 53 minutes, I counted the first one, 54 for the second one. So if you can't take advantage of 13 men during that 5-minute gap, then you've only really got yourself to blame. Or you can say hat tip to the Crusaders, well played, down to 13, managing the game, managing the ball.
Yeah. 10 minutes. That was 10 minutes in a 10-minute period between the 53rd minute and the 63rd minute that the Chiefs had at one stage a 14-man advantage and a 13-man advantage. To say that they didn't take advantage of it is an understatement. Evening, Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, they did knock over three, but Taylor came back, and the moment he came back, Mwanga knocked over a drop goal under penalty advantage. It was raining. You're thinking, oh, yeah, we're now got a 5-point lead. If you're chasing and it's raining, and it looked raining quite heavily there, it's not good conditions. The Crusaders saw it out with their defence more than their attack, really. Not allowing the Chiefs to score a try in that second half. Just knocking over threes just to stretch out that lead. Let the scoreboard do the business. And hey, presto, the Crusaders are champions for the however many time.
And no tries in the second half, Paul.
No. This was one where the Crusaders happy just to keep knocking over those threes, let the scoreboard, let the clock apply the pressure and just stretch it out slowly but surely, which is championship rugby for you.
Very, very much so. And you take them however you get them, and you've got to give these guys credit as well. They've had some injuries along the way. They've lost a couple of their props. Oh, good grief! Now it's affecting me. All Black lose Joe Moody, Ala Latoa, who they missed. And, you know, somebody like George Bauer has come in and done a superb job in that tight head position. And also, if you look out in the back line, losing Jack Goodhue and Lester Fire Nuku has come in and done a superb job. I know I will probably focus on Tuesday night. I picked the Super Rugby side, and boy, he would go very close to making a Super Rugby 15, Super Rugby Aotearoa 15. He would just be unlucky that a guy called Anton Leonard Brown, who happens to be an All Black, has been pretty consistent throughout the season.
Yeah, you know, Jersey, you say that they've obviously Braden Enor only came back for this game and was on the bench as well. They missed him all season. So, yeah, look, all the teams have had to deal with injuries. The Crusaders and the same, and also they'd be missing loose forwards as well. And the lack of the seven definitely hurt them during the regular season for that one. But I think they got back to the right ways in this one. Nocturne Rises, interesting game could come down to a single decision to kick the ball away or not, in respect to the time the Crusaders were down to 13. I guess, yeah, if you kick the ball away and the Crusaders hold on to it, then you're not going to see it, are you? So, but then again, you're only playing too much rugby in your own half. It's one of those ones that becomes a difficult balancing act. And as you say, it's a split-second decision by one of the players to decide what they need to do. And it clearly went the wrong way in hindsight. With that one, but you also say that Richard Mwanga in that second half took grip of the game and control of the game just when the Crusaders needed it to lead them around the park and control the game. Obviously, had the help of David Havili as a second kicking option outside him as well, who also was taking the right options in pinning the Chiefs back. Look, it wasn't a razzle dazzle final by any stretch, but two quality sides going at it, and the Crusaders getting themselves in front, and just keeping that handoff on the Chiefs all the way through the game to win it.
Yeah, but Paul, I've got to say though, listen, full credit to the Chiefs. They showed they were deserved finalists on that performance last night, and they'll probably look back at those opportunities that they left out on the paddock at the end of the day.
Yep, no, absolutely. And you look at that team, you don't go, okay, such and such had a howler, that's why they lost it. There were moments like the Cody Taylor tip tackle, tackle in the air, like the Sevier Reese high tackle. But on the whole, generally all players had decent games. There was no one that really, I say, that stood out as having a bad game. A few players stood out having good games, but not as bad games. So I think, all the players can be happy with their work on the evening and not be blaming themselves for what happened.
And we shouldn't be too harsh on D-Mac or Damien McKenzie either, because, boy, he played a few get-out-of-cards, jail-free cards this year, and it's one of the reasons that they were in the final at the end of the day. And he just happened to, on the night of all nights, have an off night off the tee. And, just one of those things.
Absolutely. I mean, players that stood out, obviously Will Jordan, 85 metres off his 9 carries. He is making a very good case for 15, but then again, so is Dane McKenzie and so is Shorty Barrett. So that All Black selection is going to be really, really interesting. Obviously, Dane McKenzie, many more passes than him because he obviously steps into that first receiver role a lot more and did so when Gatland went off. Other players who stood out, I mean, Cody Taylor got some meters, Ethan Blackadder and Callum Grace around the park were putting big shifts as well on the Crusaders side. For the Chiefs, though, Luke Jacobson, another person putting his hand up for All Black selection. Soakula, a decent game, but not the barnstorming one that he had against the Blues. And Takileo Somersoni there having a good lots of endeavour, but perhaps not the results he's got from his endeavour in previous games as well. So, yeah, some of the names that jumped out I guess the only downside that perhaps we should mention is some interesting selections by the Chiefs, which led to their line-out options. Having Brown in there in the locks, look, he's been really good at six this season, but not at but he doesn't really have the height to put Arcoy on the bench and have him starting instead was really a head scratcher for me, and I think we saw the damage of that in that first half when they lost a couple of lineouts.
Yeah, I agree with that, Paul. I think they could have probably started it with Mitch Brown if they were hell bent on having Jacobson at eight as opposed to Salakula. They could have had another bit of height with Mitch Brown in the sixth jersey, and then brought Salakula off the bench, shifted Jacobson onto the side of the scrum when maybe the game loosened up in the second half. So I think those are probably the underlying things that will stay with me. Just a couple of selections where Clayton McMillan didn't quite get it right. And like as previously mentioned before, Damien McKenzie, you know, just off the tee, but I can't be too harsh on the guy, mate. He got them into this position. Simple as that. And once again, in my Super Rugby Aotearoa team, which we'll discuss on another night, I just had to find a place for him, despite, a couple of others who normally play in their position being at fullback.
So do join us on Cheers Evening for the Drive More Show. We'll go through our Super Rugby Aotearoa 15 on that show. So do join us for that one. So cracking final. Congratulations to the Crusaders. We headed then over, and that's makes them 25 from 25 in finals games at home, including seven grand finals now. They've never lost at home, the Crusaders. So a fantastic record there. Moving on then to the Reds. Sorry?
Paul, I was going to say, just before we go on, out of the five wins, and it's pretty scary, they could win two Super Rugby titles in 1 year. over the next few weeks, a couple of questions for you. Would this be the most satisfying of the wins for Scott Robertson, given the number of injuries again? And boy, are they good to go again for another title this year?
We'll have a look at the a couple of things we'll talk about from and have a very quick look forward next week. I think it's got to be his first one where it's going to be most satisfying. Well, A, dealing with the travel, B, having a side that were perennial slow starters and changing that culture at the team where they managed to start fast and win their early games, whereas under the previous regime or under the previous head coach, they'd always lost their first couple of games before getting up to speed. So I think his ability to change that culture and get that first win with his first season, probably the most satisfying one. But yeah, definitely certain amount of adversity here. Also, I think the other thing we need to point out that you don't kind of look at very often is how many assistant coaches have changed during his tenure. We had Ronan O'Gara. Jones from Wales was supposed to come back for this season, but didn't because of COVID. So it's not like he's had the same stable coaching team the whole time there. There has been turnover in assistant coaches, and he still manages to get the best out of that side. So, yeah, cracking head coach. Even if I must say, I think his breakdancing days are a bit gone. He's starting to look like a dad to me. He's breakdancing in the early, the first couple of Super Rugby's were better than now. He is slowing down.
I saw something on the social network that he needs a new trick.
Well, yes, and spoiler alert: Tonalaya Topo for when the Reds won. He did a little breakdance on the ground, which was very funny. Not the skill of Razor by any stretch, but clearly having a bit of a joke about the way the Razor dances. I saw the funny side of that. Anyone who's going, disrespectful, blah, 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 rubbish. Yeah, get over it. It's all a bit of fun. In the heat of the moment, enjoying the having won the tournament. So fantastic by Tupu there. I preferred his dancing. More for the comic element, in all honesty, than the skill. Looking forward, though, and if we look forward to next week's games, next weekend's games very quickly, the Reds travel to Forsyth Barr to the Highlanders on Friday night. So they've got a short turnaround and they've got to travel in the opening round. The Chiefs in the final game of the round travel all the way over to Perth for their opening game up against Western Force. That's a chunky bit of travel after this weekend. And the Brumbies, after fronting up against the Reds, now have to front up against the Crusaders in Christchurch. So you've got to say, whilst I understand, yeah, I agree with you, the Crusaders are having some injury issues, but they're the only team who's had to play this weekend who get to stay at home and not have to travel. I mean, doesn't the schedule always suit the Crusaders?
It's just... Oh, jeepers. I'm surprised. Aaron Renshaw hasn't jumped on and actually mentioned that right now. He probably will.
He probably will now, said it.
Yeah, count to 30 and his comment will come up.
But with him, yeah, look, the Crusaders, as far as I can say, yeah, to my point of view, yeah, the schedule is as good as it could be for the Crusaders from that point of view. Getting that home game in the opening round, all three other finalists have to travel on the opening weekend, which is going to be tough for them, considering the other six sides in this competition all had the weekend off. So, look, the Crusaders, when you look at this, the next one, Crusaders, yeah, are in a good place to go on and challenge again in the next one. They are going to be the team to beat.
Actually, Paul, we've got plenty to look forward to in the second round of the Super Rugby Trans-Tasman, because the Crusaders head to Brisbane to take on the Reds. So the two individual winners will take on each other, and boy, that'll be a game to look forward to.
Yep, they get a tough start for them, facing off against the two top Australian sides in the opening two rounds. So maybe they would have liked a Waratahs or something beforehand. COVID dependent, as I think there was some sort of travel restriction to Sydney, wasn't there? I don't know I've not been keeping track of that, so I have to just see how that all pans out. The Chiefs obviously in a good place heading towards the Super Rugby Trans Tasman as well. So then, boy oh boy, the Reds against the Brumbies. Coming into this game, the Reds have beaten the Brumbies twice with final plays of the game by only a handful of points or less than that. I guess we should have expected it to happen again. I mean, three Brumbies thinking, you know, it can't happen three times in one season, surely. Well, yes. The Reds got off the right start. They got themselves an early penalty. After multiple attempts at getting over the line, Banks managed to finally score. I think the telling thing about this game is actually the Reds' defence. The Reds really stood up massively in this one. This isn't so much about we've had them beating the Waratahs by 40 odd points for record scores, etc. We've been talking about how wonderful some of their attacking play has been this season, but this game, this win was built off the back of their defence, wasn't it?
Oh, hugely. And when you consider they were missing probably one of their better defenders and Hunter Paisami, who's probably still picking up a couple of ribs that were lost out in Perth when they played the Western Force somewhere. It just showed they really missed them. They had two very, very light midfielders. But to be fair, those guys defended really well. And there weren't that many clear line breaks that I could actually think of that the Brumbies actually made, whilst they tended to dominate possession. And we know how good their set-piece line-out is. They will probably look back at this and think to themselves, should we have been a little bit more expensive?
Yeah, I really look at things about Jock Campbell and Monwing only had to make two tackles all game. Pataya on the other wing, six tackles, whereas Hamish Stewart, 11 tackles in that 12 channel, missed one. He had a lot of work to do.
And if you think about the if you think about last week when the West, I think it was the Western Force in the semi final, they actually ran a lot of, they had to defend a lot of traffic through that area as well. So it was obviously a real win-win focus for the Reds, the fact that they didn't miss too many tackles in that, that area. And I think they did really well to keep the bigger ball runners from the Brumbies under wraps as well, especially Valentino, the number eight. He's just such a good carrier, but they seem to keep him in check.
Oh, look, Valentino has really stepped up this time. But yeah, 8 runs, 14 metres, really didn't get going. Bashed into a lot of things. Nick Frost, again, 7 runs, 13 metres. Alatoa, Sio and Longren all got like 6 and 7 runs, but none of them got more than a metre per run. And defence, a lot of that's down to McWright, 16 tackles, non-missed. Harry Wilson, number 8, 10 tackles, non-missed, before he went off. Because he was the one that went, it was Wilson that went off concussed, wasn't it? They didn't even bother with HIA, just went, nah, he's not going back on. So big shifts by them. Tate McDermott, the scrum half, what's your main job? Well, clearly tackling. 10 tackles, 1 missed. Wow. He got through quite a bit as well. You've got to say that it was built on that defence, really, by the sides. But, and again, they didn't go particularly wide. Right on the wing, 0 tackles, 0 missed. He didn't have to make 1 tackle all game. And that's my kind of game. Even I could survive a game of Super Rugby, maybe, if I didn't have to tackle anybody. Banks, only 1 tackle, 1 missed. Muirhead got involved a little bit more with 4 tackles, 1 missed. But, yeah, the Reds not really using their wingers this game.
No, not at all. And once again, you speak about some nocturnal talks about that unusual selection of Liam Wright. I mean to say, if you think back a year ago, what a revelation that Dalgunu was on the wing. It's really surprising that they're actually using him off the bench and more or less using Campbell as a winger who's normally a fullback. But I suppose that's to probably accommodate Hegarty with a kicking game.
Yeah, and you end up playing it. James O'Connor, Hamish Stewart, Bryce Hegarty all can play 10. I mean, there's 3 playmakers has been part of their part of their system this year. Much as a lot of us would like to see Hunter Paisami and Jordan Pataia as perhaps that centre combination, but Pataia's been playing much more on the wing there. So it was all Brumbies for that first like 25 minutes, and they only got 1 try in there. The Reds got over the line with Fotikaya, but he couldn't get the ball down and was held up by Nick White, or Nick White's leg, which probably should say. And they did knock over a penalty, and that's been one of their things in this season, hasn't it? They've been reliant on that James O'Connor knocking over those threes, just building a score and being happy to do that. And then we saw that with the fact that they didn't score a try until after the final hooter. All their scores up until that point were James O'Connor knocking over threes shows the importance of your kicking.
Exactly. But there was one area where I thought the Reds were really just really getting on top, and I thought to myself, well, if they can get themselves field position and milk a penalty, I just thought their scrum was going so well, especially into that last quarter. And when Valentini obviously got sent to the bin, any scrum that went down, they were going to pull a penalty. And I thought to myself, if they get themselves field position and are able to hold the ball and apply pressure with only a try needed, you're well and truly in the game.
Yeah, so look, James, I guess we that's really what where most of the discussion has been about the last sort of 5 minutes. Brumbies had, I'd say, all the possession, all the territory in that first half, just couldn't get the scores. The Reds' line-out was an issue for them as well. And they had to make twice as many tackles in that first half than the Brumbies, as I say, built off that defence. But come the last 5 minutes, as you say, James O'Connor's kept them in it. It's 12. It's a 4-point game. It's 12-16. They know they need a try to win it. They turned down the 3 at that point, with 5 minutes to go, knowing that actually, you know, we may not get back down here again.
Yeah.
Some interesting tactics. First, they take the scrum at a penalty option. Then when they get a penalty from that, they then kick to the corner and do a line out. And you're like, well, hang on, but you just called a scrum. Why are you now kicking to the corner for a line out? It works. The line out was that the driving ball was collapsed by Swain, and off he went for the yellow. Then the line out's overthrown, and you're thinking,
yeah.
The Brumbies have got this now. Look, the Reds have just thrown this game away. The clearance gets touched, semi-charged down, and you're thinking, boy, the Brumbies have got lucky here. Not only have they got out their own 22, they've got their own line out, only to lose the line out. And you think, wow, this is the Brumbies lost one line out all game, and it's that final line out there. The Brumbies lose 19 to a yellow card. I can't remember off the top of my head what that yellow card was. They're down to a scrum of only six men. Another penalty. So the Reds take in front. The Reds take that scrum, get another penalty, and then they start tapping going. And everyone's like, what? Hey, what's going on? What are your thoughts on the tactical choice there?
Just common sense just went out the window, Paul. I think it's the only way to describe it. I'm yelling at the TV going, scrum, you've got to scrum. You know, I think with the scrums, those scrums, if you've got an advantage at scrum time, you can have basically a double play at it, because simply if you can get the advantage for a scrum, for a dominant scrum, and it's under advantage, well, you get a free play, basically. It just made common sense to tap and go. Anything could have happened. You could have turned it over at breakdown. It was a nutty decision. In fact, both of them were super nutty.
Well, so the referee had warned the Reds that they had to hold the scrum up, that they had to hold the weight, because there were eight against six, and I think there was it might be a hindsight one rather than actually something that was decided actually in real time. But they decided that, as Nocturne Wright says, the scrum can be a bit of a lottery, and it's a ref's decision. So they said, right, we're taking this out of the hand of the referee, and we're going to go tap and go instead, because we don't want the referee to decide this against us. And at the end of the day, if they needed three, then you go for the scrum and try and get the penalty, because you can kick three, right? But if you need five, where's that five coming from? Okay, you get a free play with a scrum, because you get a penalty advantage, but you still need to get over that line. Tupu just charged the line. Everyone's jumping around thinking that he's scored amongst the Reds. Then the ball comes out, spun wide to James O'Connor, who dives over and scores all 19 of the Reds' points to win the game.
And I've got to say, that created a bit of confusion, because it sounded like from the referee was saying that he's held up or short. And I'm going, well, what is it? Is he over the line and held up? Is short? Is going to go for it? And then it somehow incredibly came out from the ruck again. And of course, the rest was a straight run in for James O'Connor. So, yeah, just crazy, crazy finish.
As you say, players definitely struggling under pressure there to make the right choices, both on attack and defence.
Some of the posts that are coming up tonight have got a bit of a negative connotation about the quality of the game. Listen, it was a tough watch, but you know what? It's been a while since we've seen 40,000 plus in an Australian stadium watching Super Rugby, and whilst it wasn't one of the great games, it provided a grandstand finish, shall we say, Paul? Yep. And listen, if that rocks the world, and if it's going to get crowds back to watch the Reds again in 2 weeks' time when they play Crusaders, if they don't get that sort of crowd again, I'd be scratching my head. Especially it'll be a great gauge for them to see how good they really are against the New Zealand champions. But boy, don't take it for granted that we are so much better than them. I sense that's coming through in not just our posts that we're getting, but on the social network. And yeah, a couple of chaps on our own rugby chat line, Paul.
Yeah, look, it's the say big crowd for this one, as Simon says. Look, it's on channel nine, channel nine's main channel. They had a peak audience of 464,000, average audience of 285,000, 100,000 plus. Also watching it on Stan Sports, meaning it was the most watched Super Rugby match since the Reds 2011 final win. So the viewership is up this year. There's a lot of positivity around rugby in Australia at the moment. Part of that is they've got it off Fox and they've got it away from all the Fox negative media coverage. We're getting positive media coverage out of it. People are enjoying it and people are watching it. So, look, a lot of positives for rugby in Australia. They've got two competitive teams. Are they going to beat the Crusaders? Well, most of our teams don't beat the Crusaders either, so I don't think so.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They are going to be competitive against all the other teams.
Yeah.
The other three, well, maybe not, but those two certainly will be. And to have that kind of audience, see that positivity about rugby in Australia at the moment is great to see. And it is making them think about whether they do they want a Trans-Tasman full-time competition next year, or do they want something similar this year to this year, how they have an Australia competition followed by a Trans-Tasman competition. It's going to, yes, cause some interesting conversations by the administrators. But, yeah, resounding success for over there, the move to Stan Sports and having some games on free-to-air. And it's great to see positivity around the game over there, which we've lacked for the past, I don't know, getting on towards 10 years.
Yeah. Oh, very much so. It's just great to see. And I've got to say, it's a real victory for Brad Thorne as well. You know, we have to think back to last year when he had player payment issues with a couple of players who decided they weren't getting paid enough and decided to head overseas. And in fact, it's been well publicised that one of them is coming back to Australia rugby and doesn't want it, wants to come back to Queensland, but he's not wanted. And man, we know Brad Thorne doesn't suffer fools. He makes hard calls. We can see that in the selection of his team.
We've seen that from word go when he said, right, sorry, I don't want Quade Cooper. I don't want Genia. Off you go, guys. I'm not sure if Genia was there or not, but definitely Quade Cooper. He said, yep, no, thanks. And a couple of other players. You're like, well, you've just cut all the experience from your team. Yep, but I want the right characters. And several years later, we're seeing the benefit of that coming through with this side. And the fact that, yeah, they are. Look, so we've won three games, all of them by a single score. I think this is their biggest winning margin out of those three against the Brumbies. To have gone and beaten, only have lost one game all season to the Force so far. Look, he's doing a great job there and showing some resiliency in that squad.
Absolutely, Paul. And I've got to say, at least he's a player who's not a former international who's just jumped into a top role. If you recall, he also won a title is one of the Queensland NPC teams a few seasons back, so he's done his time.
I'm not sure he did his time. He came in as sort of strength and conditioning coach and also then head coach of, I think it was, I can't remember if it was Queensland Country or if it was Blankston City up there, the city team. But yeah, it was only one or two seasons before he was suddenly head coach of the Reds. So I mean, he has had a meteoric rise. It's been very quick. I think he's needed some experienced assistant coaches around him to help him out on perhaps some of the technical side of things. But as far as culture is concerned, yeah, he's clearly got the right attitude up there amongst the players, and they're reveling in it, which is great. And when you think about someone like James O'Connor, how he was in his youth, how he was one of the three amigos, who was one of the how Brad Thorne got rid of one of those amigos, but was happy to keep another one. It shows A, the growth in James O'Connor, and B, how Brad Thorne is willing to read players how they are now, rather than necessarily what the reputation was. Thank you, folks, who are telling us the Queensland country that he was that he coached. I think he might even coach him to a title as well. Or did you say that already? I think you probably did. some points there that perhaps he was coaching also towards the end of his playing days at the Highlanders as well. I think a lot of players get into some sort of quasi-coaching towards the end of their time, especially if they want to go into coaching. Your senior players are part of the coaching team in some ways, aren't they?
Yeah, probably more technical roles they're brought in, technical and mentoring roles. I would suggest that they come into these sides. And of course, moving back to Queensland, you know, I think probably not just Australian rugby, but I think Queensland rugby identified an opportunity. Man, he's a guy that's done everything in rugby, literally everything. He's tough as teak. And if he can bring some of that ethic across to Queensland, and boy, if there's a success, that's what he's done, Paul. He's brought some etiquette to that Queensland team. And I've got to say, boy, they're nowhere near the finished article as well.
Oh, no, look, he has built that. He's taken a very young Queensland Reds team and grown them up, which is great to see. Since 2018, he's sort of been involved there, or at least probably his head coach from there. So, yeah, great story. And it's been a great story watching it over the past, 4 or 5 years? Not 1920. Sorry, 4 years in that one, and he's done. Yet he's gotten there in the end after coming just short last year. Obviously, now it's on to Super Rugby Trans Tasman. Don't forget to join Cornflake and Shane on Thursday, probably about 5 o'clock ish, or you can watch a recording of that as I'll preview all of the Super Rugby Trans Tasman games. We get through 5 games this week, Stephen. That's hard for them. They've got extra work, and I'm not paying them anything extra, I can tell you.
No, that's fair enough.
I know you're good like that. on that one, any final points before I wrap things up?
No, I suppose it just seems crazy that we hardly have time to relax. I suppose the biggest thing for me is how do these teams well, obviously for some of them, they'll be able to reload quickly because their seasons ended last weekend, so they've had the extra week, so it might be a little bit easier to reload for the likes of the Reds and the Crusaders. Yeah, I think it'll probably be a little tough initially to refocus, but boy, you wouldn't discount them to win this competition again.
No, absolutely. I guess from a Waratahs and a Rebels point of view, they've had 2 weeks off, so will they be rusty coming back next week, having not played rugby for 2 weeks? Hopefully they've been playing some club rugby, pardon me, in that gap. Folks, don't forget, we'll be keeping our full rugby coverage heading on through to Super Rugby Trans-Tasman as well. So those post-game reactions of the New Zealand games on a Friday, Saturday evening, our preview show on the Thursday and our review show on the Sunday, as well as the Driving Maul show on a Tuesday as well. That's up to 5 shows a week, all about rugby here on New Zealand Sports Radio. Because you know what? You just can't get enough rugby, can you?
No, you can't.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.